Go back and look at pictures of yourself at age 10 and age 20. The same person, sure, but really the same person? A lot happens to anyone while they're growing up. We'll focus this hour on what happens to girls growing up in America. They have lots of pressures on them from within and without, and it concerns a lot of people involved in the well-being of young people. One of the concerned people is Leonard Sachs, the author of the book Girls on the Edge, Why So Many Girls Are Anxious, Wired, and Obsessed, and What Parents Can Do. Leonard Sachs is a physician and a psychologist, both MD and PhD, with a focus on child and adolescent development. By last count, he had visited more than 400 schools and other places where young people gather around the world. His previous books include Boys Adrift and The Collapse of Parenting. Leonard Sachs, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for inviting me.
Sure. This book was a previous book. What made you come back to it after 10 years?
Well, a lot changed. So I was working as a family doctor in Montgomery County, Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C., 1990 through 2008. And I saw all these families where, in the same family, the boy is a goofball and doing poorly in school and spending all of his free time playing video games. And the girl seemed to be doing great. She's doing well in school. She's got lots of friends. But when you talk to the girl, you find that she is anxious. She's secretly cutting herself with razor blades. And I was bothered by that. The parents often didn't realize that the parents were proud. You know, hey, look at Emily. She's doing great. We're worried about Justin. He's flunking out of Spanish. But the daughter was struggling. So that was the motivation for the first edition that was published 10 years ago. And as you said, a lot has changed in 10 years. And 2010 for girls now seems like the good old days. When you look at the numbers, the rate of anxiety, the rate of depression among adolescent girls has just exploded in this country, and it's gotten much worse, incidentally, since the pandemic. The best numbers we have now suggest that more than 60%, more than 3 out of 5 teenage girls in the United States are now struggling with symptoms of anxiety, depression, or both since the pandemic. That's much higher than for their brothers. And social media, which I talked about in the previous book, I mean, when I wrote that book, Instagram did not exist.
Wow.
According to Nielsen, more than half of American girls at 12 years of age are now on Instagram. So it's gotten a lot worse, and that was the motivation for updating the book.
So where is there a particular age that is most vulnerable? I mean, is the spread birth to 18, or is it something somewhat narrower within there?
I would say it's kindergarten to high school, and I'm not joking when I say kindergarten. Certainly by second grade, third grade, we have girls coming home from school saying that they were teased because they are a muffin top, meaning that they have a little roll of flesh above their waistline, and this focus on looking cute and is beginning earlier and earlier, so that you now have second grade girls who are talking about going on diets, which is really hugely unhealthy. Again, the concerns that 14 or 15-year-old girls had 10 years ago, you know, does this make me look fat?
Mm-hmm.
We're now hearing from girls in second grade. American culture has become a very toxic culture for girls.
Well, and a lot based on appearance from what you're telling us here initially. So it's not about, I mean, you got the on the one hand, the do well in school, get into college, and I can remain staggered by how many more women go to college than men now.
Right.
But not just the academic stuff, but also the things on appearance and the things that, you know, as you mentioned, kids in high school might have said to each other, but now they're getting it in kindergarten.
Well, there's always been talk, at least for most of my life, about how women are pressured to do it all, to achieve in the workplace, be a great mom, and perfectly juggle that work-life balance. But the challenge is that those issues of balancing now extend down younger and younger, so that you now have middle school girls who are concerned with looking great, being a great athlete, and being a great student, and doing this all at once. And their brothers are blissfully unconcerned. boys are much less concerned on average than girls are with nailing the trifecta of personal appearance, school, and athletics. But many, many girls are feeling this strain, and they feel like it's never enough. It's never enough. The treadmill never ends.
You quickly get to a point in the book, Dr. Sachs, developing a sense of self. Is there a mm-hmm. typical age for when that takes root, or an age when you think it should have taken root?
Well, I think parents always need to be aware that that's part of a healthy child development. So when I meet with a child or teenager, one of the very first questions I'll ask is, tell me about yourself. And you want to listen carefully to that answer. If the answer is, I'm really great at ballet and I've got a 4.0 average, okay, that's great. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
That's not who you are. And I'll gently push this kid to dig a little deeper. Tell me more about who you are. And increasingly, I've been a medical doctor now for 31 years, and increasingly you'll find that girls will push back, that they're like, well, already I just told you that. I'm a dancer and I'm a great student. What else is there? Well, you know, as gently as possible, you want to communicate there is more to life than the performance. Because the performance is going to come to an end, and you're going to be alone in a dark place, and you're going to need to have some resources to draw on. And at every age, you want to make it clear that life is not and should not be primarily about the performance, primarily about amazing people with how awesome you are. That you need to have a sense of who you are that's separate from what you do. And, of course, I'm finding this now not only in children and teenagers, I'm finding this in adults as well.
Sure. We'll pick it up on the other side of a break. Leonard Sachs is our guest. His book is Girls on the Edge. We're back to talk more about it in a minute five here on the Jefferson Exchange. Leonard, we pointed out that girls do seem to feel more anxiety and depression and just basic pressure, it seems like, than boys of comparable ages. But how differently do the girls' troubles manifest than boys?
Well, they manifest very differently. And again, I mentioned how many families I have seen in my own practice where the boy's a goofball, he's spending his free time playing video games, he's having a great time, this teenage boy. He and the other boys who are just like him, hanging out with their headsets, playing Call of Duty, Grand Theft Auto, looking at pornography, they're just having a great time. And you talk to these boys, and they really sound happy. I mean, they enjoy their video game binges and their pornography. And the parents are pulling their hair out because it's like, where is this headed? You know, you're going to be a professional bum. You say you're going to make a living playing video games. You know, what's the odds of that actually happening? But the boys themselves are not anxious or depressed. They're disengaged from the real world. But if you try to call their attention to that, they're like, oh, yeah, right. So you're saying, like, the real world's more important than the virtual world. And I'll say, yeah, actually, that's exactly what I'm saying. And they'll say, like, yeah, right, that's, like, still 1990s, you know. They couldn't care less. They're really not concerned. But the girls are much more involved in the world of social media, on average, than in video games. I've talked with a lot of girls and a lot of boys about this to try to understand, why would being immersed in the social media world lead to anxiety and depression, whereas being immersed in the video game world doesn't? And the kids themselves have helped me to understand why. And here's the answer. If you spend 20 hours a week playing Call of Duty, Grand Theft Auto, RDR2, Fortnite, you will succeed. Maybe not right away, but you will eventually succeed. These games reward effort in a very consistent, almost linear kind of way. You know, the first few times you play Fortnite, the first few times I played Fortnite, I got killed, like, right away. But if you make the investment of time and energy, and put in enough hours, eventually you will be the victor. You will conquer. You will be victor. Number one, Fortnite Battle Royale. That's not true for social media. I've talked to so many girls who have invested hours, and money making this perfect TikTok video. And it really is perfect. It's cute. It's funny. It's great. And after a week, they have 42 views and some negative comments from anonymous people. They put in all that time and effort, and they got nothing. It's the nature of social media that you can put in a lot of time and effort, and you get nothing in return. There is no guarantee. And it seems totally random. You look at the videos that went viral, they're not any better. They're often obviously worse than what this girl has put out. Why did they get 5 million views and she got 42 views? I don't know. She doesn't know. That disconnect between effort and achievement is profoundly demoralizing. And I think that's one reason. It's not the whole story, but it's one reason why girls who tend to be more immersed in social media than boys are, that immersion in social media can easily lead to anxiety, depression, discouragement. Whereas the video game world, if you are immersed in it and that's what you care about, you could be a pretty happy camper because you will succeed. You will triumph. You will be master of the universe.
Wow, that is a major difference. Leonard Sachs, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Girls on the Edge, Why So Many Girls Are Anxious, Wired, and Obsessed, and What Parents Can Do. Four major factors you see as the driving problems for girls. We just touched on social media, but there's also sexual identity, obsessions, and environmental toxins. Let's talk about sexual identity. The prepubescent girls seem to be expressing them sexual identities before they've even had, you know, the ability to function sexually.
That's right. And that's one of the really toxic features of American culture right now. I mean, American culture has always been sexist. But 50 years ago, 60 years ago, the sex objects were actually adult women, like Marilyn Monroe and Sophia Loren. Not anymore. Today, girls who are looking at YouTube are immersed in a culture that's all about presenting yourself in a way that will appeal to boys, to look cute. And right now, the number one song on the Billboard Top 100, the number one song in the United States right now and for most of the past 6 weeks, has been WAP, W-A-P, stands for Wet Ass Pussy. Broke the record for the most video downloads in its first week, 93 million videos. So if a girl is looking at the most popular video, this is what she's going to see, which is an ode to vaginal lubrication. It uses the F word, uses the N word. And that's very confusing and disorienting for a girl that this is what it means to be popular. In the United States, if you're female, you talk about wet-ass pussy. There are four women who have more than 180 million followers on Instagram. Let's see, Selena Gomez, Kim Kardashian, I'm blocking on the other two, but all four of them post with these, you know, provocative, pouty lips, half-dressed, and a lot of girls look at this and they're like, yuck. That's not who I am. If that's what it means to be a girl or a woman, I want no part of this. And so what does it mean? Look, girls want to be women. Boys want to be men. That's always been true. That's a very robust feature. The anthropologists tell us it's robust across cultures and across time. Kids don't want to be adults. Girls want to be women. Boys want to be men. And most cultures take a lot of time to teach kids what that means and what is expected. We used to, and by we I mean Americans who speak English at home, but we no longer do. Instead, kids are cast loose in this culture, the culture of Cardi B, Selena Gomez, Kim Kardashian, Ariana Grande, she's another one with 180 million followers, trying to figure out what does this mean. I don't like it. So what am I? Am I even female? I don't know. great confusion about something that must not be a source of confusion. Whether you're female or male is a pretty profound part of your identity. And if that's in play and you don't know what it means, and what you see, and you're immersed in a culture that's telling you that it's about wet-ass pussy and posting half-naked on Instagram, that also leads to confusion, disorientation, disengagement.
Yeah, I'm reading the rest of the lyrics for WAP, and there are quite a few we can't say on the radio. We're stretching the limits already. Leonard Sachs is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book, revised after 10 years, is Girls on the Edge, Why So Many Girls Are Anxious, Wired, and Obsessed, and What Parents Can Do. Your input is welcome here, either in the form of a question or something to share with us about your experience with being a girl in our culture or raising a girl in our culture at 800-838-3030. 3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You know, it's not just looking sexual and talking sexual. What have some of the girl patients told you about their sexual activity?
Well, they do. And it's getting to be a chore. So a generation ago, girls who were sexually active, the most common form of intercourse a generation ago was penile-vaginal intercourse. But increasingly, we're finding that's not true, that for teenage girls in the United States, the most common form of sexual intimacy is oral sex, which means the girl on her knees servicing the boy. And it's all about pleasing the boy. And the boy ejaculates, and it's over. And I describe in the book how a growing number of girls have told me, you know, if that's what sex is about, I'm not interested. Another young woman told me that if she never sees another penis for the rest of her life, she'd be fine with that. That it's dehumanizing, this emphasis on oral sex and male satisfaction that is absolutely a big part of a lot of American popular culture now, and is clearly communicated as normative in movies from, you know, starting with Superbad more than 10 years ago, that's what you do if you're a girl. You get down on your knees and you give the boy pleasure. That's sexual intimacy.
But obviously in this relationship, then, if you can even call it that, or this encounter, I mean, so the boy gets pleasure. What does the girl get?
Not much. And there has been, again, an explosion in non-heterosexual, non-cisgender identity among adolescent girls in this country, which really is without precedent. 10 years ago, lesbian was the big thing. Right now, transgender is the big thing.
And you think some of this is a reaction to the pressures put on girls? Like, who wants to be a girl under these conditions?
Well, you got to be real careful here. Mm-hmm. But when I speak on this topic, we always start with the numbers. There has been a 4,000% increase in the proportion of teenage girls who say that they are boys. I'm old enough to remember 15 years ago in 2005, when I read a book called Why Gender Matters, among transgender individuals born male who identified as female greatly outnumbered individuals born female who identified as male. And that had been true for as long as anyone had been studying transgender and gender dysphoria. Individuals born male were much more likely, typically around 3 times more likely in most studies, than individuals born female. Since people began studying this, but in the last 10 years, that has flipped. Not because there are fewer individuals born male who are trans, but because the proportion of individuals born female who identify as trans has increased by more than 40-fold. For every one such individual in 2010, there are now 40 such individuals right now. A 4,000% increase. That's well documented in the United States and in the United Kingdom. And seems to be true in other developed countries as well, although we have the best data for the United States, United Kingdom. Why is that? Well, we could talk a lot about that. But I think one factor, one of multiple factors, is, again, girls who are looking at, immersed in contemporary American culture. The bonds across generations have been broken. Again, a generation ago, girls were looking to adult women that they knew and would hang out with for some guidance about what it means to be a woman. Well, it can mean a lot of things. A woman can be an astronaut. She can be a surgeon. She can be combat infantry. She can do anything. That was the message girls were getting a generation ago in the era of Sally Ride. But today, oddly enough, that's no longer the case. That people may pay lip service to that idea, but in reality, it's not true. My own teenage daughter, her dream is to fly, to be a pilot for the United States Air Force. And people now say to such girls, are you trans? Do you identify as male? What's your preferred pronoun? She doesn't identify as male. She's a girl who would like to fly a plane. But the weird thing is that today the girl who wants to fight in combat is asked, maybe you're male. What do you think? The boy who wants to dance ballet is asked, you know, what are your preferred pronouns? The irony of the moment we're living in right now is that it's leading to reinforcing gender stereotypes. Without this recognition that there's a whole universe of things that a girl can do as a girl, you don't have to transition to being male in order to be a fighter pilot.
Leonard Sachs, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Girls on the Edge, Why So Many Girls Are Anxious, Wired, and Obsessed, and What Parents Can Do. Here's a call from Lane in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello. So I agree with a tremendous amount of what the author says about things and about how girls don't feel right about the way it is with sex and boys and their obsession with porn these days. But there's one thing in that the author said about Americans, and then he said, those of us who speak English at home. Mm-hmm. I really objected to that because there's a tremendous amount of Americans who are great American citizens or whatever, and they don't speak English at home. Mm-hmm. Okay. My ancestors came here from before the American Revolution, and they were Scotch, Irish, English, and German, Swede. And I imagine with the German Swedes, they probably didn't speak any English at home, mm-hmm. if they spoke any English at all. But that didn't mean that they didn't build good lives and build a good country.
Okay, thank you for that, Lane. And so let's explore, Leonard. What did you mean when you said households where English is spoken at home?
I apologize for not being more clear. I'm just referring to the research. When we look at the effect of contemporary American culture, we find that the kids who are most at risk are kids born in the United States who speak English at home. We find that kids who do not speak English at home are protected. They are doing better. And I've done a great many events for Muslim communities across the United States, including a great many in Northern California. And when I speak to any of the Muslim groups where you'll commonly find that a majority of the parents were not born in the United States, I will say, if you are fluent in a language other than English, speak that language at home. Do not speak English at home. Make sure that your kids are fluent in that language. Listen to the music in that language. This is not a guess. We have a great deal of research, which I cite in another of my books called The Collapse of Parenting. We have a great deal of research showing that kids who speak English at home are now at much greater risk of being anxious, depressed, and or disengaged compared to their neighbors in the same community, same household income, who do not speak English at home. And this, incidentally, is a huge change from the data of 50 years ago. 50 years ago, kids who spoke English at home had an advantage. They did better at school and were less likely to be anxious and depressed compared to kids in the United States who did not speak English at home. And when scholars first began, so scholars studying this about around 20 years ago, around the year 2000, discovered, ooh, that doesn't seem to be true anymore. And in fact, it's flipped. And certainly today, it has flipped, meaning that immigrants who arrive in this country from overseas and do not speak English at home now do much better at school, in emotionally, in terms of psychiatric diagnosis, they do much better than kids born and raised in the United States who speak English at home. Who's on the honor roll? Who's graduating with highest honors? Who is not diagnosed with ADHD, anxiety, or depression? Kids who just arrived here from overseas who don't speak English at home now do much better on all those parameters. And, you know, my brother is academic dean at this little college on the Ohio-West Virginia line.
Okay, hang on a second. Before we get to that story, Leonard, I need to take a break. So, so just before that fires, we'll remind people we're talking to Leonard Sachs about Girls on the Edge. Thank you for cleaning up the English language reference, and we'll get back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. And Leonard, you're just about to tell us about your brother, who's the dean of students at a small college.
He told me how the local high school, at the honor ceremony, there aren't that many immigrant kids in this little town in southeastern Ohio. But at the honor ceremony, all the kids are the children of immigrants, Malaysian, Indonesian, India. Kids born and raised in this country, boys think it's uncool to work hard to get an A rather than a B. Girls are obsessed with social media and certainly don't want to spend all their free time working on their science fair project. Again, who's winning the science fair? Children of immigrants. Who's winning the spelling bee? Children of immigrants. It's great that the children of immigrants are doing so well. What's happened to the American kids? This was not true a generation ago. Mm-hmm. And that, again, this is not a guess, and it's not kids these days, you know, they just don't know how to work hard. We've got all this data. The original title of my book, The Collapse of Parenting, was titled The Collapse of American Parenting. Mm-hmm. And the subtitle was why most kids would now be better off raised outside North America. And, you know, I've got more than 400 scholarly references in that book, beginning with this avalanche of data showing that being born in the United States and speaking English at home is now a major risk factor for bad outcomes at school, bad outcomes psychiatrically, anxiety and depression, disengagement. So that's why I mentioned speaking English at home, mm-hmm. because when you look at the data, one of the key variables you must consider is what language is spoken at home. If kids are speaking English at home, that's a proxy for participating in American culture, looking at American videos on YouTube, and that puts you in a bad place.
Wow, that's pretty amazing stuff. I'm glad you cleared that up. Let's take another call from Anna in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Leonard Sachs.
Hi, Jeff, and hello, Leonard. I have some comments and a question.
All right.
First of all, about gender identity. The language of gender is evolving in our society at this time. And throughout this topic, the identity that girls grab onto as one who did, is a tool to access more choices in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what I was thinking when I was 10 and 11 years old, but I certainly look like a boy. I have no memory of identifying that way, except all I wanted to do was surf. Mm-hmm. So in the 50s and 60s, it gave us access to sports. Sports gave us access to toys, cars, boats. Later on in the transition, gender identity or what gender you identify with, whether it's sexual or just boys have more toys, I want to do what the guys are doing. So if I have to do this to get that, and it also means probably an aversion to the submission, the A, B, the guys on top, girls on the bottom, identity. So, you know, that's a very complex topic. And it doesn't really lead well in this current part of the discussion about whether the girls are performing well in school or if they're happy or not, I think one of the things that's happening that I notice, we're in a very traumatized population in Humboldt County because we just got through the 30 years of drug war, and I've been very concerned on the impact of post-traumatic stress mm-hmm. on kids here. And what are you going to do to a kid who's living in a stressed-out world? We've got climate change. They know about this stuff. Mm-hmm. For example, in the 50s, I was told about population zero, and I made up my mind as a fifth grader that I didn't want to have children. If I could have the money, I would adopt.
Mm-hmm.
So these kids are very hip to the current events. Of course they're depressed. Of course they're going to do these other things. What are you going to do? Tell them that they're Santa Claus, and then they got to go through this whole disentanglement of reality, and you know, I mean,
okay, Anna, I'm gonna assume that is your question then about what are we gonna do? Just to get back to Leonard here and let him catch up on the material here. What do we do? I mean, if in a world where there are so many pressures and so many concerns about the state of the future, 2020, you picked a great book to put this out on the market again. A great year to put the book back out there, Leonard.
Well, my answers are always based in evidence, and on this topic, I consult with Gene Quinge, who I have very high regard for, a professor at San Diego State, and she has pioneered a field that she calls cross-temporal analysis. Turns out we do have large data sets mm-hmm. of how American children and teens felt going back to the 1930s, using the same questions that we use today, 1940s. So 1930s, unemployment, adult unemployment in the United States, people who wanted to work but couldn't find jobs, was over 20% for much of the 1930s. The Great Depression was much more severe and long-lasting than the economic hit that we took earlier this year. In 1941, with the outbreak of the Second World War in the United States entering the war, there were concerns that Boston, New York, Los Angeles might be bombed. And with the Nazi juggernaut in 1941, Nazi Germany had occupied most of Western Europe, and there was no clear sense that they could be beaten. People had very good grounds to be anxious. My mom, growing up in that era, had nightmares of her neighbors marching down the street, goose-stepping and doing the Heil Hitler salute. My mother, like me, was Jewish. So people had very good grounds to be anxious and depressed during the Great Depression of the 1930s in the early years of the Second World War, but they weren't. Rates of anxiety and depression were always under 10% for American girls in that era, and now they're in excess of 60%. So Gene Twenge does not think, and incidentally, this was true before 2020, this was true last year, 2019, rates of anxiety and depression were many times higher for American girls than they were in the 1930s and 1940s. And she is convinced you can't blame it on economic factors. The American economy in 2019 was doing wonderfully well compared to the American economy in 1937. And yet, girls in the United States in 2019, many times more likely to be anxious or depressed compared to girls in 1937. How come? Short answer, the breaking of bonds across generations. In the 1930s and 1940s, there were rich, strong bonds connecting girls to adult women, not just their mothers, but a whole community of women. Those bonds have been broken. And instead of girls hanging out with adult women, they now hang out with other girls. So again, we're running out of time, but short answer, what can you do about it? You must restore those bonds. Take advantage of this pandemic where a lot of us are quarantining at home. Build connections across generations. And again, a lot of American parents are doing the wrong thing. They're letting their kids hole up in their bedrooms with the doors closed, and your daughter's binging on social media and your son's binging on video games. That's not best practice. Turn off the devices. Turn off the screens. Go for a walk with your kids in the woods. I don't know if that's safe right now with the wildfires and all, but get outdoors with your kids. Do stuff with your kids. Restore the bonds across generations.
I want to make sure we touch on environmental toxins, because that's a big part of this book and a major concern. And I guess I continue to be surprised at how early puberty is happening. Is it just for girls, or is it happening with boys as well?
Throughout the middle of the 20th century, onset of puberty decreased for both girls and boys. But about 40 years ago, I had tapered off for boys. And the rate onset of puberty for boys is not any earlier now than it was in 1980. But it has continued to get younger and younger for girls. In the United States, more than half of girls have now begun the process of puberty prior to 10 years of age. I'm old enough to remember when girls didn't begin puberty until 13 or 14. Not anymore. I was in a seventh grade classroom with this girl who could easily have passed for 16, talking about sexual harassment. Her process of puberty was complete. Sitting next to a boy, same age, but he could easily have passed for 9 years of age, talking about Darth Vader and the dark side of the Force and lightsabers. You know, between these two kids, there cannot be a conversation. She's a young woman concerned about sexual harassment, and he's a boy who wants to dress up like Darth Vader. The acceleration of puberty is harmful for girls. And again, we have a great deal of data showing that girls who go through puberty earlier are much more likely, again, to become anxious and depressed in adolescence. So again, there's more than one factor driving this explosion in anxiety and depression among American girls: the breaking of bonds across generations, and endocrine disruptors and environmental toxins, social media. None of these are logically linked to one another, but together they've come together in this perfect storm that is really putting girls at risk.
So all kinds of things around us then. I mean, what's at the top of your list for limiting exposure? And I guess we'll start with social media. I mean, how do you limit exposure, and what do you recommend for keeping tabs on what your teenage girl or younger girl is doing?
Well, you need to sit down with your kid and say, look, my parents insisted on knowing where I was at all times. I have to know where you are at all times. Except now it's not out there, it's online. I'm going to have this app on the router and on your device, and I'm going to limit how much time you spend on social media. I'm not going to prohibit it, because I understand that social media is how American girls communicate with one another, but no more than 40 minutes a day. And after 40 minutes a day, it's going to lock you out, and you will not be able to log back in for 24 hours. And I should tell you, American parents are very skeptical that any of these monitoring apps work. They're like, oh, come on, my daughter's just going to Google, how do I get around parental controls on NetNanny? Well, I have done a great many presentations across Silicon Valley. I've actually talked to some people who work for NetNanny, and they told me that they have people whose full-time job is to Google the phrase, how do I get around parental controls on NetNanny? And if they found that some kid has found a hole, they will patch it within hours. The parental monitoring apps will work. You have to do your homework, but find an app that will work on your device. Incidentally, they don't work so well on the iPhones. Mm-hmm. If you're serious, you need to get a Samsung phone, Android phone. I have no affiliation with any phone maker. But you have to limit and govern and guide what your kids are doing on social media. 3 hours a day is too much. Endocrine disruptors, good news, there's lots of easy things you can do that I summarize in the book, but it's very simple. Don't buy anything in a plastic bottle. Polyethylene terephthalate, leaches antimony, and diethoxyl phthalates. Those substances act in the human body like estrogens. What happens when you give bottled water to a child? Well, it depends whether we're talking about a girl or a boy. If you give these synthetic estrogens to girls, you accelerate the process of puberty. If you give these synthetic estrogens to boys, you lower testosterone levels, which undermines drive and motivation. So what have we got? We've got unmotivated boys and girls going through puberty at 9 years of age.
And we have a great email to close off on from Mary in Ashland, who says, I'm a 68-year-old woman and I have two comments. One, from my own experience, teenage girls have always felt the intense pressure to look sexualized. It is the interest of male researchers that is recent. Two, males blithely play video games and succeed later in life because they feel a sense of entitlement. They know others will pick up the slack and they don't have to. The video games aren't preparing them for life, but allowing them to reinforce entitlement from a system of male privilege. They can goof off and someone else will pick up the slack. Girls don't feel that. That's from Mary in Ashland, and I thank you for that. And I thank Leonard Sachs for joining us today in the Exchange to talk about his updated book, Girls on the Edge, Why So Many Girls Are Anxious, Wired, and Obsessed, and What Parents Can Do. Leonard, thank you so much.
Thanks again.
Good to have you. That will do it for today's Exchange. We are online at jeffexchange.org. Also on, we're going to talk about social media after that. Yeah, we're on Facebook and on Twitter. Our producers are John Baxter and Angela Decker of JPR News. Our student assistant, Randy Babbitt, is at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. I appreciate you listening, and please join us next time on the Jefferson Exchange. Take care, stay safe, and have a great day.